Welcome to A Gram of Hope. I'm your host, Jerome Graham, and on today's podcast, we're going to be speaking with Elder Steve Allen. Now, that last name, I'm sure when we tell you what's going on, it's going to strike a chord with you. He is the brother of Bishop Rance Allen, the godfather of gospel. And I'm sure Bishop Allen had a whole lot of other titles because he worked with so many people. And we are blessed to have somebody who's been there every step of the way. And sometimes there's sibling rivalry, but this family was truly family. Elder Allen, how you doing, man?
Oh, I'm doing good. Glad to be here.
You know, there was a quote from one of my favorite Rance Allen songs says, "See, Rance, I see you struggle a long, long time, but I see here by your record, you've been doing just fine. I see the way you fought the devil on every hand. Say, listen here, man, you're what I call a good Christian man that will be good enough for me." Bishop Allen said, "If I could only make it to heaven, that would be good enough for me. Heaven is the place I truly want to be. And if there was anyone that made it into glory, I know I'm going to see Bishop again." Talk about your brother, man.
Hey, man, those words of that song, those songs that you gave right there, that truly sums him up, because he truly was a man of God. He loved singing. He loved preaching the word. And a friend of mine, he told me, he said, "Man, you know, your brother, he literally wore his body out serving God." And I said, that's the way I like to think of it, because he truly, every day of his life, he lived what he sung about. He lived what he preached about. And if there was no other humble man I can think of than my brother, the Bishop Rance Allen.
Now, he was the pastor of New Bethel Church, where you are an elder as well. And we who on the outside looking in, one of the things we used to always say is, why doesn't he get a bigger church? He has all this going on. Did you guys ever feel like that, that you were so well connected, you had all of these activities going on, and this is, quote unquote, Bishop Rance Allen, and when he had an event, it would be packed? Did you guys ever talk to him and try to say, "Bro, get a bigger church"?
He had the opportunity all of his life to do things bigger than what he was doing. Yeah. When he was singing and started in gospel music, they wanted him to sing R&B. As a matter of fact, some people from, you remember the Dick Clark Show?
Oh, yeah.
They came out and talked to him. They wanted him to switch over his music. He's always been in a position to accept something more, but he was happy being able, believe it or not, New Bethel Church of God in Christ. He loves preaching at that little small church, and I'm sure he could have, well, he spoke at churches 10 times as big as New Bethel, but yeah, he still enjoyed just coming home and just being mild, meek-mannered Rance Allen.
You know, you mentioned that he spoke at bigger churches, but he also was on bigger stages. And one of my favorite movies was Watts Stacks. And man, when he came out on stage on Watts Stacks, and for those of you that don't remember Watts Stacks, Watts, Los Angeles, right after the riots, had gone through some changes. There was money out there to rebuild the community, and they did a fundraising concert that not only had gospel artists, but it had R&B artists, it had comedians, there were people that were just starting out. The headliner, actually, I believe, was Isaac Hayes, but it was one of those movies that was just so different. What do you remember about Watts Stacks, Elder Allen?
Well, one thing I remember about Watts Stacks is that we were almost not on that show, because we were supposed to catch a plane out of Detroit, Michigan, to fly into Los Angeles, and somehow we missed the flight. And it was the only flight going out there that would put us on that show. So my brother says, "Well, let's go ahead and wait in the, go and get some coffee and try to figure out what we're going to do. And my other brother said, well, there's nothing for us to do. He said, there's not another plane coming, so we've missed it. But while we were sitting there drinking coffee, something that he never does, he doesn't like coffee, but he had a cup of coffee, he comes over the intercom that the plane that was headed for Los Angeles is coming back to the terminal. They have an issue with it. And the issue was that the toilets on the plane quit working. So they came back to have maintenance repair them, and we were fortunate enough to get on because it came back.
Wow.
Had it not came back, we wouldn't have been on that program.
You guys had to be on there so I could have the memory. I know that sounds kind of selfish, but man.
Well, yeah, because I do believe that too, because we weren't one of like the highlights of the show, but then when they play it now, they always play the part that we were singing. So it was like it was meant to be.
Did he have a lot of those types? Because he was truly a spiritual man. Did you guys have a lot of those experiences where something seemed like it wasn't going to work, but all of a sudden, divine intervention took place and what was not going to be happened?
It happened a number of times. I mean, it happened a number of times. Even with our music, we were hoping to get the music played to a lot of different genres. But, you know, at gospel music, no one really played it but on Sunday. And we had I Belong to You. They started playing it every day. And do you know, people came to us, they were upset. They said, man, they're playing your music through the week. That's just wrong. They should only be playing it on Sunday. Because back then, that's the only time they played gospel music was on Sunday. So they were upset. Said, man, I heard your music in the bar. They was playing it in the bar. And we're like, you know, we want the music to go out to reach people who normally wouldn't hear it because they don't listen to gospel music on Sunday. If it's being played Monday through Friday, that means someone who's not listening to gospel music is going to hear it or they're going to change the station, you know? And even if they change the station, they'll change it because they heard the song, you know? So I say, that's where it's getting out to more people. And that was one of the first experiences of a crossover record, something back then that was almost unheard of. I can think of one song back then that crossed over, Oh Happy Day.
Oh Happy Day.
That one I do recall, but there outside of that, there was very few songs that crossed over.
You know, I'm thinking about that experience because now you're actually being played by a universal audience or being received by a universal audience. And he had a voice range, a vocality that just would not quit. Man, how did he stay so humble with such an awesome gift?
He never bragged about his singing. He just felt like God had given him a voice to be used, and he truly used his voice for God. I mean, he truly used it in that way. And when he wasn't singing, he was just a regular, straight, ordinary guy. If you didn't see him on that stage, you wouldn't even think he could sing the way that he could sing.
Now, I talk to you, I interact with you, and I have met Bishop before he passed. And I got to ask you, I'm thinking of other groups that came along, and I look at you guys, you as a family, you were tight. It didn't get out about any infighting, any big egos. Is that something your parents had something to do with? Or how'd you guys stay so close-knit and not try to vie to be the big dog in the family?
Well, my grandmother was the one that really put our group together. And she basically said to us, you know, you guys got to stick together when you're out on the road to make sure you look out for each other. And, you know, me and Tom, we recognized that my brother had a voice that was different from anybody's. I mean, people used to say, can you sing like Rance Allen? And I'd say, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know of anybody that can sing like Brant Allen. You know, so it wasn't never a thing. We weren't trying to compete because he just had a different voice. And we recognized that. So I said, man, I want to be as complimentary as I can and add what I can add to this thing to make it work. But we all recognize that. I felt like, you know how somebody say he's a star among the stars?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was that kind of a guy. It's like in when you talk about basketball, Steph Curry is a star among the stars. Everybody on there is good, but he's just a step above even being great. The greatest. You know what
yes.
I mean? You're all great, but he's the greatest. It's sort of that kind of a thing. So there was really never issues about that. And when he would get the accolades for the stuff he was doing, hey, we were just excited about it as people who were just coming to watch and see, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes we go back to the dressing room afterward, man, you really hit that note. I mean, you got up there tonight. You know, I mean, we were that kind of stuff.
Now, did all of you play an instrument?
Yeah, when we started out, I played bass guitar. You'll see that in the Watch Stacks movie. I was playing bass, and my other brother was playing the drums, and Pastor Allen was on the guitar at that time.
Wow.
So, and then it was years later that when Chris Berg came on the scene, why they got a whole band. Chris was playing the keyboards. We had Courtney DeWitt on the organ. Terry Faison was on guitar. Gordon Henry was playing drums, and my brother's son, Nicholas Allen, was on the drums. And those guys stayed with us the entire time. And they were a great band. So we just concentrated on singing, and we didn't have to worry about the music because they had it all down pat.
That made it a little bit easier.
Made it a little bit easier, because then that way when you could go off script, you didn't have to worry. You know how sometimes, because my brother, when he get the ad-libbing and the singing, I mean, he's going to take you somewhere, and you just better be ready to go. Wherever he's going, you better be ready to go there, you know?
Now, see, I've heard other artists do that, like James Brown. I remember when he would want to change something, he actually would walk around to the group, and he'd say, we're going to put it on the one. Or he'd say, Fred, I need you to come on. Fred, come on.
Exactly.
So, you know, he would actually talk to the group and let them know, we're getting ready to make a shift. And I think George Clinton would probably, he would do the same thing. He'd yell back to somebody and they'd know that was a signal to make a change.
He would do that.
Rance would do the same thing?
He would do that, yes.
So you just had to be ready.
And they were ready. They were ready when he got ready to change something. And he say, this is what he need to him. Boom, they were right on it.
Now, you guys, I saw you like at the University of Toledo, and then I'm looking at you guys in front of the President of the United States. How did that affect you? I mean, to all of a sudden you're just standing there and you're thinking, look at where we are. That's the President sitting there versus those folding chairs at the University of Toledo.
Hey, it was just a great honor to realize that, you know, from such humble beginnings, to be able to go from singing for a handful of people to be singing to thousands of people, people of dignitary and stuff like that, that we, when we set out, that was never the goal. The goal was just to be good enough to sing for whatever crowds would come, but we had no idea that the crowds would get the way that they were.
Now, I used to watch Elvis Presley. They had a regimen. They would go in the back before they would go out on stage, and they'd actually warm up by singing an old gospel song, and people would kind of get hyped and what have you, and then they'd come out and they'd do the show. Did you guys have a regimen of your own?
It really wasn't a strict regimen. The biggest thing we did when we were not to eat before we sang, and they would always bring all the food in the dressing room, and the band could eat. So we always have to take the band, take it easy, guys, so that when we come back, there would be some food, because we had some hungry guys in the band. You know how they say, stay hungry? The band was
hungry.
They
literally stayed hungry.
They stayed hungry, yes. So, but the other thing was that we usually just drink water at room temperature, And we always had a prayer before we ever went out on stage. We always had a prayer before we walked out.
So you guys had a spiritual regimen, because that sounds like what preachers do before they go out.
Right. We never went out stage before having that prayer first. Never.
Awesome. Now, you sang with James Cleveland, Shirley Caesar, Kirk Franklin. I don't know who you guys may have sang with back in the 50s and 60s, but is there anyone that you guys wanted to ever sing with that for some reason schedules didn't work out or whatever? You just didn't get the chance.
I can't really say there's not too many. I know we once, we opened up a show at the Amphitheater in Chicago. I think the Amphitheater might be torn down now, but in Chicago, Illinois, the headliners on that show was the Jackson Five. And my brother truly wanted to meet Michael Jackson. And they told us when it was over, we would be able to meet the Jackson Five. So security took us down to their dressing room and everything, and we met all of the brothers except for Michael. And my brother was so disappointed because they said we could meet Michael. We saw Michael. He was far as from me to the wall. But all the brothers came up and shook hands with us. And the one guy says, nobody can see Michael. And he says, well, they said we could see him. He says, I don't care what anybody said. Nobody can see Michael. And Michael was in the corner. And I felt kind of sorry for him because he looked sad. Because all his brothers were happy, shaking hands with us. And he looked like he wanted to shake hands, too. He did. He looked like he wanted, but he looked sad to me. And I thought, oh, man. And he was a young kid then. He was a young kid. And I thought, man, he just looks so sad. I wasn't disappointed not to see him. But my brother, he was disappointed. He really wanted to shake hands with Michael.
See, Michael could have fixed that. Later on, he could have came back and said, you're rat selling, right?
Exactly.
But I got to ask you, what came first, the preaching or the singing?
You know, when he started out, he kind of did a little bit of both right from the beginning, because he'd been preaching since he was five. He could hold a tune at that time, too.
At age five.
He was probably more noted at five for the preaching, just because a five-year-old preacher gets people's attention.
Absolutely, especially one that can carry a tune and hold it.
Right, because to preach at five, I mean, you got no scriptures. And that's just unusual for someone at five to know the scriptures and be able to repeat them, you know, from memory. And he could do that. So that was what really started first. But then he just got to where he could just hold that tune, you know.
True calling.
Right.
True calling. Dr. Thomas Dorsey, James Cleveland, Rosetta Tharpe, Mahalia Jackson, Walter Hawkins, Kirk Franklin, the Winans. Gospel music has evolved. Thomas Dorsey, Dr. Dorsey, they told him, you can't sing that up in our church.
Right.
All of a sudden, you get somebody like Walter Hawkins, and like you guys, Oh Happy Day, being played through the week. Gospel music has evolved to now you have the gospel artists. You don't know if that's R&B or if that's gospel. Have you had a conversation with anybody to say, look, this is where I was, this is where I see gospel music going? And any of those conversations ever come up? Because if anybody would know, you guys been there.
Yeah, our music, when we started, there was really no category for the music, because we tried to get on Savoy Records, which was at that time the main
R&B
gospel label, Savoy, and they said that our music sounded too R&B-ish for them, so they didn't want to sign us for that reason. So we actually went to Motown Records, and he liked the sound of the voice, said if we could change the words up of it otherwise, because it's a little bit too gospel for us, but if you could change the lyrics, we could probably do something there in Motown. But so that didn't work. So that's how we wound up with coming to Stax Records. And Stax actually didn't have anything for us either, but they said they were going to make a label called The Gospel Truth. And that's how the label, The Gospel Truth, we were the first artists on the label The Gospel Truth from Stax Records.
That's phenomenal. Well, let me ask you, we're talking about the evolution of the industry. A lot of rap artists are getting intermingled with gospel artists. But it seems as if there's a certain level of angst. Well, let me just cut across. Violence that's associated with the rap industry. They've got to clean some things up. And not too long ago, I did hear about some of the rappers actually donating money to law enforcement to see if they could come up with a program that would reduce the negative perception or reduce the violence in the industry. Do you think, or have you heard, where that level of violence may follow the rappers into the gospel? And because I will tell you, sometimes you look at some of the gospel artists on stage, and you say, whoa, that ain't what I remember of gospel. Where's, you know, ties and white shirts and suits and what? Not anymore.
Right, and I don't think you necessarily have to have the ties and white shirts and the suits, but still people should be able to see what you represent. You know, if you're singing gospel, then there's a certain representation that should still come through with what you're doing, you know?
And so what you're saying is that what people see should typify who you are.
Right.
And I mean, the message is getting cloudy.
Right. And if you're sending mixed messages, then you're going to get mixed results. You know, you have to make it plain. If I'm a gospel artist and I'm here for a certain cause, that cause ought to jump out front. And if it's somewhere in the background, well, then I'm really defeating the point. I'm just singing to reach a lot of people, but I'm not really saying anything, and it's not changing anything. Usually gospel music is put out there so that somebody will hear it, and it'll make somebody think in a positive way towards, you know, towards Christ, towards positive things that people could use it to enrich their lives.
Well, like you said, it made a difference, at least in your minds, having it played through the week. That was outreach.
Exactly.
It was not locked into just Sunday, and then you were going to miss getting to the people that really needed deliverance.
Right, because we've had people say, man, I was dancing to your music in the club before I realized what you were singing about. And he said, but it was cool when I was dancing in the club, but when I really thought about it, he said, I took a greater appreciation for it once I took time to realize what you were saying. And that's what we want. If it grows on you, you know, you just be bopping, hearing it, not really paying attention to the words, but really those words are getting in. And that's what's so dangerous about some songs when they're negative. You might be bebopping to it and not really realizing that you're getting fed negative energy that's in your subconscious mind that could come out at some point.
And speaking of energy, Elder, you're bringing positive energy. But what I'd like to do is I'd like to continue this conversation in another podcast. Would that be okay with you?
Oh, that'd be fine. That'd be fine.
All right, my man. We appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today, sharing so many memories, and we have just begun to get started. So we're going to have you back and go on a little bit further, have you on another podcast. And I want to thank not only you, but I want to thank all the people that are listening and ask that you come on back and get the rest of the energy, get the rest of the memories that Elder Steve Allen is sharing with us. This has been interesting. This has been uplifting. Look, I'm your host and producer, Jerome Graham. Our executive producer is Chris Piper. If you have any questions or comments, or you just want to listen again, go to wgte.org/HOPE. That's wgte.org/hope, or wherever you stream your podcast.
WGTE, voices around us. WDTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission. For more information about the Voices Around Us podcast project, please visit WDTE.org. You may also listen to all Voices Around Us podcasts at WDTE.org/VAU, the WDTE app, or wherever you get your podcasts online.